Have your attention, please. The next item on our budget agenda is to raise the legislative salaries.
This is to $120,000.
Pam Magasey is has to move this.
What is this for, salaries? That's GO. We're taking that up.
Do you want to refer it to committee, Mike? Yeah. It's going to be a direct proportion to what the stock market has done today.
That's funny.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right.
I think we should commend Legislator Proto for taking such good care of the county last week when Mike, Leslin, and I were all out of town. And Frank was acting chair.
Yeah, he was ranking.
He didn't even know it.
Did you notice the changes that I put in place?
We derailed. We haven't told everybody yet.
They have become effective October 1st.
You and David did it together because you were in charge.
Well, thank you, Martha. The first order of business was to reduce the number of legislators in Dryden.
Seniority rules. Seniority rules.
All right. Okay, I had somebody else had their hand up. Okay, Mike, are you ready to make your motion?
Yeah, but if you have business to...
No, I don't think we...
Oh, wait a minute. You want to do the fund balance, right?
Oh, okay. Oh.
You were just handed out a sheet that looks like this.
Oh, okay, this.
If you look at line 33A, mm-hmm. This is what we were referring to before. The fund balance has been certified, and so now this is an official number. You have $1,482,829 over the target fund balance.
That's up about $300,000. You had hoped that we would keep $1 million in above our target for what might happen from the state, and now with this potential of $1.4 million in reserve.
Right.
Okay.
Great. All right. Mike, you have a motion?
On page 47 of our over-target request booklets, over-target request 30, the anger management program, presently is recommended at zero. I would move that it be moved to change to $22,400 for 2 years. Not that it doesn't deserve yet to be target, but I wanted more time to get more conclusive evaluation. We have an interim evaluation now. I look for more conclusive evaluation. So 2 year funding is being moved.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Yep.
All right, Frank seconds. And discussion starting with Mike.
Well, I know that it's just today we've gotten some of the information of the interim evaluation, but the executive summary refers to very concrete initial results. 100% of the people who refer to the program saw improvement in the young people's behavior. 100% of the parents and caregivers saw impact. That's incredible that a program like this, after 6 months or now 9 months, can have 100% of the people who are watching the behavior of these young people see a positive impact. So I would hope that people could allow the program to continue. We had an earlier vote this evening about the importance of stabilizing even beyond one-year funding to 2 years so that the program can function without having to have people look for other jobs partway through the year, and then we can revisit with more permanent evaluations at that time.
Further discussion? Julie, Martha.
Just for the record, I was going to move it to target, so I'll certainly support your 2 years.
Okay, Martha?
It's a really strong program, and I hope people will support it.
All right. Any further discussion? Mike, can you repeat the numbers again?
The OTR is 30. The page is 47. Mm-hmm. The amount is $22,400 2 year funding.
2 year. Okay. Will, you look.
Do we have a second on that?
Yes. Frank was our second.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Martha?
Yeah, I just want to correct. It's shown as a new initiative, and this is one of those in that sort of category of things that it's been, we funded it last year as a one-time, and so this would extend that. It's not literally a brand-new initiative.
Okay, thank you.
Should we have a category, continuing initiative?
Don't open that one.
How could you have a continuing initiative?
Okay, all right. So, ready to vote? All those in favor? It's 10. And opposed? And you're opposed.
I had my hand up for in favor.
Okay. Oh, you had your hand up for in favor. I'm sorry. Okay, so that's 11. So 11 ayes and one no. All right. Great. Mike, your next motion?
I'd like to move the exact same intent for the Learn to Earn program, which is on the same page, OTR 31. The amount would be 6750, 2-year funding.
Sorry. All right, Frank seconds. All right, discussion. Kathy?
Can you go into why the other one had strong documentation? What's our supporting rationale?
The threshold of young people who can get some subsidies for summer jobs, given the different regulations and criteria and poverty levels, ignores people who are just slightly above those criteria ranges, and yet they still need support to succeed, and employers are willing to hire them with this kind of stipend. So, yes, we did not get papers like we did today on that other program on a midterm evaluation. We did get some testimonials at our public forum regarding the impact. I would use the same rationale that 2 more years will give us time to evaluate the program.
All right, I have Martha and then Jim.
I talked about this with Nancy Zaylor today a little bit, and she clarified for me, I wasn't quite sure. It's not just the stipend, but there's staffing that is that at the workforce center that where there's coaching for the young people, and it really so it sort of gives an employer who might be a little nervous about. I mean, you remember Samantha, who the young girl with a hearing disability. An employer might be a little nervous about how to accommodate somebody, or if there are behavioral issues. The staffing is really critical to getting them all over that hump of knowing that the employer knows that there's going to be somebody coaching the young person, and the young person really is learning with that extra support. And my understanding is that about half of the kids who've been in this program that started out with their salary paid by the program, the employers picked up the full salary after a few weeks or whatever. So,
yeah, 6 out of 11 were subsequently hired by their employers with the employer's own money.
All right, I have Jim and then Kathy.
This past week I had the opportunity to talk with a principal in a trust attorney firm in Hartford, Connecticut, and he knew of me being on the county legislature here, and he said, the biggest problem we have is getting people hired. And we have many, many jobs that people can do, but people show up wearing jeans, people show up wearing inappropriate clothes, and they have no clue of what kind of job they're even applying to. I'm glad to hear that we can help a few people. We're 6750, but clearly there's a whole bunch of young people out there who don't get it yet and need to get it, all the help they can have.
I have, I'm sorry, did I, Frank? Kathy and then Frank.
Just 2 things. These are youth at risk of dropping out. It says youth at risk, so I just want to know. And the other piece is, here it says, it's kind of small print, but I'm trying to get at it. The data piece, which y'all know I'm real strong on, it says here, the youth board will be faced with difficult choices without the benefit of any new data or tools to set priorities. So the assumption I'm making from this is that part of what we'll get out of this additional year of Is this what this is? Is it
here? No, you're on the wrong one.
Oh, I'm on the wrong one.
But that's okay. Keep talking.
No, I wondered why I was understanding that's this wrong. Right. So these aren't youth at risk. These are youth that are just a little bit above the income requirements. Right. Okay. Just
vote with me.
Well, I wish it was that simple, Frank. I've been led down the primrose path before.
Yeah, Kathy, I think there's two characteristics. One, as has been mentioned, is young people who are just above the income guidelines that would qualify them for federally funded programs that provide a lot of intensive support, like the JobLink program through Workforce. This is a program of the Ithaca Youth Bureau's Youth Employment Service, and while they really function like a one-stop but for young people, so anybody can walk in the door regardless of income, and they get information on how to apply, guidelines for interviewing that Jim was alluding to. But then, as you narrow down the funnel to those who are both either economically needy or who have other challenges, which could be their behavior, could be a disability, who are harder to place, that's the target for this program. And to clarify, the value of the program is not only the stipend, but the staff support and coaching, but the staffing is actually already in place through the target funding we provide to the program. This is really supplemental funding that goes primarily just to the young people as part of their startup wages and partial fringe for those first few weeks, while the employer gets to take a look at the young person, and the existing staff is providing a lot of intensive support and coaching so that the young person has every opportunity to succeed. And we've had, as we said, 6 out of 11 so far have been continued in their job site at the employer's expense because they were proved to be valuable.
Frank, and then Will.
So I'll pass.
Okay. Will?
And so you've asked for funding for 7 people. Is this, and it says how large the pool of potential people, or is that a good reflection of the need?
No, the pool is much larger, and there are other employment programs in our continuum. This is really, I mean, the County Youth Board volunteers know that you're facing challenging times, and this amount of funding is what the program needed to continue at the current level. The need is greater, but it's a modest request to at least hold steady with what they've been able to do.
Okay. Great. All right, let's vote on this motion. This is, again, for $6,750 for 2 years. So that's multi-year funding. And all those in favor? And opposed? Opposed. So nobody's opposed. Okay, so it's unanimous? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
All right.
And what is that, 12?
No count.
That's 12 of them, yeah. Okay.
Don't ask us again.
Yeah. Okay, all right. And also, I'm going to interrupt real quickly. I'm going to allow Mike Hattery to make a motion today regarding assigned counsel because he will not be able to make the next voting meeting. And so I hope nobody ever has a problem with that. We have Julia here, so hopefully we can have questions.
Is it recorded in the system and you can put it up? OTR 91.
Yeah. All right, we're not going to do it yet, though. But we're going to.
Oh, we're going to add it at the end.
At the end.
Okay,
that's correct. That's right.
I thought you were telling me to go.
Oh, okay. All right. No. I just wanted to give people forewarning. Yeah. Okay. Great. Next, Mike, do you have anything else regarding youth services? No. Sorry, Julie, did you have a question about that?
I have a question for youth services, but not a motion.
All right. Okay.
I'm looking at page 200 in the big book, which is OTR 33. Which is maintain Keystone support for recreation partnership, $1,896. And I could not figure out for the life of me what is explained in numbers 3, 4, and 5. 5 says, although a 10% increase is needed to fully support all the programs, The partnership board proposed a 2009 budget that includes just a 3.4% cost of living, maintaining most of the programs. The county's share is this. And I don't know what the share would be if all programs were to be maintained. I don't know whether the city and other partners' shares were possible at a higher level than what this reflects. I don't know how to make a motion if I wanted to. Is there more information available, Nancy?
Yes. I don't have the figure in front of me, but as you know, the partnership is comprised of 11 municipalities, and when they reviewed the budget scenarios at a 0% increase, at a 3% increase, and what it would take to maintain current level of service, as we mentioned, the amount to fully maintain all existing programs would be at the 10% increase level, and that, by the partners around the table, felt that that was an increase larger than what they felt comfortable going to their municipalities with. And I think Frank and Jim have been the county's representatives on that board, and I think the compromise figure of this 3.4% is what maintain the essential integrity of the programs and felt to be financially reasonable as an amount for all municipalities to go back and put that amount in their respective budgets. And that's the commitment that they have made in this budget cycle, to put that in their town and city budgets.
Okay, the impression I got from reading numbers 3, 4, and 5 together was that the non-county partners would go to their boards and ask for an increase.
No.
But the county's getting asked for a lower increase.
No.
That's not what's intended by this one.
No. Okay. Thank you for clarifying. No. All partners agreed to take the amount of 3.4% back to each of their respective budget processes.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Okay. All right, Mike, your motion?
If we're done with youth services, I'm ready to move on to the sheriff's office.
All right, moving on to sheriff's office.
On page 72 of our OTR books, on OTR 61, I had a question for Peter. I didn't have a chance to call him today. I apologize. That's the wrong number.
71. About the food?
Yeah.
71.
Yeah, the OTR 61, the increased food costs. We learned at NYSAC in the spring, I guess it was February, regarding a possible option of buying in or taking advantage of a program up in Utica that distributes food in a more economical fashion than we might be able to make it locally. And I wondered if what your consideration of that option had been for our local jail as opposed to the present.
Well, as I've explained to public safety over the past several months on and off, I know Mike Hattery's asked a few times about it, and so have a couple other people. We are exploring the issue, and we were finally able to get an appointment with the people from the DOCS, New York State Department of Corrections, and they were down speaking with the chief and I on Friday for about an hour or so, reviewing our facilities, talking about their program. And essentially, so you understand what their program is just acting as a vendor. In other words, one of my main suppliers right now is Cisco Foods because they're state contract price. And if we went partially or totally with New York State Department of Corrections Cook Chill program, that would supplant part or all that vendor depending on what we choose. We also buy from a company for dairy under state contract and a company for bread under state contract and a few other odds and ends. But those are the three bigger ones that we use besides suppliers for, you know, paper products and other products we need to serve this stuff. So we're in the process of evaluating that. We had a nice discussion with them on Friday, and they indicated that they would send down some pricing sheets to us. They said, who are you getting your food from now? I said, the bulk of it comes from Cisco. And they said, okay, we'll send you down the sheets. when you're comparing, please look and see if there's anything you're actually getting charged less for than we are. I said, absolutely, because your taxes come out of my other wallet, too, so I understand that problem. So, you know, we're in the process of it, but it takes a little time. And it's important for the legislature to understand is this doesn't eliminate any staffing. They don't come down and supervise your operation. They don't come down and run your operation. You still need the people to prepare, serve, and put the meals out. So there's no savings there. The savings will be if we can go with them, and we are able to go with them in a partial sense, not in a total sense. It will just be a cheaper price from a vendor versus the current vendors that we have. Chenango County just started theirs Friday, and Cortland is indicating they're looking at it for some. So I've talked with Sheriff Price in Cortland, and when they have their day where they come in and start their start-off day kind of thing, the chief and I are going to go over and take a look at it and see what that is, besides evaluating the price sheets that come in, and we're going to evaluate the price sheets from our current vendors. We've asked them for some information. So I suspect over the next 2 or 3 months, we should have a better sense of if there's things we can buy from them, just like we do from any other vendor, and review it on occasion, take a look at it and see if we can buy it cheaper. That's what we'll do. But I don't think it's going to amount to a large amount of savings. If you look at the sheet I passed around, you'll see that we're projecting our food budget to be somewhere between $25,000 to $30,000 over at the end of the year. And we've kind of supplanted food and fuel and a couple other things in the jail budget over the last few years. And so there's really no room maneuver. In fact, I think the $16,000 increase is really about almost half of what I believe we're going to need next year. But if we are able to find efficiencies in this vendor or any other vendor, then we may be able to live with the $16,000 we requested. But food prices, as you know, if you go to the grocery store and you're buying things, they're up compared to what they are and what they've been the last few years.
And Mike?
So what time period do you think the analysis would take? Would it be within the budget process? So if we made a tentative motion and waited for more information, would that be within the next month and a half?
I'm not sure it's going to be that quick. It took me 2 months to get them to give me an appointment date to come down and see us. And we gave them several dates and times when we were available, so it wasn't from our end. So I suspect, and no one doing business with the state of New York in the past, it'll take longer than that. But as I indicated earlier, even if they could come down or supply me everything I needed next week and we could all review it in the next 30 or 40 days, unless there's savings there, we don't know if there's any savings there and there's any large savings. And I'm hoping that either with them or some other vendor, we can shave $10,000 or $15,000 off the food bill and related items for next year. Because if we're not able to do that, even with this $16,000, we'll be over budget at the end of next year on our food lines. In fact, if you recall, when we did have money in the jail budget a few years ago, we used to supplant. In fact, Mike Hattery and I got into a good discussion about it, about why are you putting money in for food and fuel? Because we didn't budget for the full amounts because we're limited without an OTR request, and we're trying to rob from Peter to pay Paul, and we're going to do the same thing. We've done that for years, especially the last 2 years, in the jail budget so that we can either minimize overages or reduce expenditures in one way, shape, or form. And that's what we've been doing, and that's what we intend to keep doing.
Mike? I don't want to dominate, but I just wanted to, you mentioned that it wouldn't require staffing changes. My understanding of the Cook Chill program is it would not require as much preparation. That it's not just food prices would be given to you at a lower price or equivalent price to Sysco, but the way that they prepare for the food coming down from that Utica facility requires less prep and therefore require less staffing to deliver and clean up.
Well, the problem is, Mike, keep in mind we run a jail. It's a 24/7 facility, and we only have a cook in there for 8 hours a day. And I don't know how we would reduce that and be able to still plan menus. That's our responsibility, not anybody else's. In fact, we have to have those reviewed by nutritionists on an annual basis. That's a requirement of the Commission of Corrections. And we have to run the inmate staff and supervise the inmate staff. So if we don't do it with cooks, we're going to have to do it with correction officers, and correction officers are more expensive than cooks. So it's...
Well, maybe I'll continue the conversation with you offline, but
at this juncture, I'd like to, at that line, move it from target to one time while this opportunity gets explored.
I have a second. Kathy seconds. All right, we're discussing this motion right now. Any comments or questions? Frank?
I guess we've all experienced, as Peter said, an increase in food prices at the grocery store, and I imagine you're getting some sort of a break because of bulk buying and whatnot, which is appropriate. But, Mike, do you have some number in mind as to what we may anticipate saving by doing this as a one-time?
The one-time is only to give time to explore whether it's cook chill, whether it's, you know, reconfiguring staffing. I'm not in the jail. I don't know. But it strikes me that he just had a meeting on Friday. There might be some savings. There might be other ways of delivering food within the jail. And we're just essentially getting an update one day later. I would suggest that, like other things, we're looking for more analysis, more evaluation. This might be one area to give the jail staff and administration time to meet the State Department of Correction requirements, both for nutrition but also for watching the taxpayer dollars, which I know Peter does all the time.
But the Peter, when you do the estimates, or whoever does the estimates on what the food budget might be, do you base it on a certain population in the jail, an average or a full or 80% or what?
Yeah, we do. And now it's much easier to predict without variances. When we had variances, it was a little harder to predict a food budget. And actually, when we had variances and we were serving more people, the cost per meal was a little bit cheaper. Just because of quantities and economics, the cost per meal goes up a little bit. So, but keep in mind, Frank, and I put it on this sheet here, and Michael, that the jail budget is in a very perilous situation. As you recall, we had a deficit last year of about $110,000. There's no proposal except for adding food and fuel into this budget for next year, and there's been no major influences on us from an operational perspective that's going to allow us to make any great efficiencies in doing anything else we're doing other than what we've been doing, which is reviewing contracts, making agreements. Like, we have an agreement with the sheriff from Shenango County where they come. If we have two or more people that need to be boarded out, they'll come, pick them up, and it saves us the labor and transportation costs. And I think that's reflected, you'll see, in that 3151 line where the board out monies have been a little lower in the last year or two than they were the previous year. So we're doing whatever we can to do that. But the overall jail budget, as I try to explain to you in this sheet as briefly as we can, is in tough situation, and it's, you know, without an influx of cash. I mean, if we were lucky enough to find vendors and reduce $15,000 with the request I'm making, we would break even on the food budget. If we were lucky enough to reduce $30,000, that $15,000 more than likely would go in the payroll that's over right now, and even with supplanting overages in payroll with replacement pay, we're still gonna be over there. Plus, we have trouble with the fuel budget, as many of you do at home, and it's, you know, we've tried to budget for those two items and try to look at putting together, and I think this was recommended by the county administrator as well, which, you know, is the first where the county administrator and I have every item I've asked for, it's been recommended, and we fully explained over the last 6 months to him. So I think that's a positive. Well, so, Peter, you know, I was just hoping that those things would kind of continue along.
Quick follow-up. Yes. Peter, the number of individuals that are incarcerated with special dietary needs, I remember it wasn't too many years ago when Shirley King was there, and we had to provide certain food for her because of dietary needs. How often do you run into that, and when that happens, what does that do to your food budget?
Well, there's special diets. There's a percentage in the jail of special diets, either for religious issues or for health issues.
Health issues.
And we just deal with it. I mean, that's,
you know, the same.
That's what the cook does every single day, is reviews who's in the jail and what their issues are, and then puts together the meal for the day. The meal menu is planned 30 days in advance, but for the specials, obviously, we don't know who's coming in, who's coming out, and we just make those adjustments daily.
Thank you.
I have Kathy, Dooley, Martha, Jim, and then Mike Bigler.
Thank you. I want to commend the sheriff and the department for taking steps in these tough times to try and figure out ways to further curtail budgets, and appreciate the creativity and the flexibility that it's going to take to do this. And I support looking into it, and I think that a one-time support for this will definitely be the way to approach this and to give maximum flexibility. I know a lot of the departments are in equally dire circumstances, and everybody's doing their part, and I appreciate you showing your support.
All right, Julie.
I'm having trouble making sense out of what's in our books. So first, I'm looking in the big book on page 316. Under corrections, there's a food line, which is 164,817 in 2008, and again in 2009 with an over-target request of 15,183, which is more like 10% increase OTR, it looks like, requested and granted by the county administrator. Then I'm looking at the OTR request 61 that we're talking about, increased food costs. I guess it's in the jail. And the administrator's comment says 2% over in the food budget now, so he's recommending a 2009 budget, I guess, increase 2% target and 2% one time. I just asked Steve what that meant, and he said it really should say 4% target increase. But that doesn't square with what I see in the big book. So if you could just please tell me what the actual numbers are, and what the percentages are.
I think I can clear it up. The 15,183 is what the sheriff requested. When it came to me as a recommendation, there was another recommendation. The language that's in there captures a sense of that other recommendation. When we met with the sheriff, we agreed to increase the by the full amount of the request. And so the language didn't get changed, but the numbers did. So that's why they're out, I was thinking. Mm-hmm. So the 15,183 is correct. We felt that, you know, talking with the sheriff and looking at exactly what had been going on with the food budget, that he was really tight in the food budget, and the 8 or 9% increase was justified.
So the OTR should say closer to 9%.
Correct.
And then because of this strange language in the OTR, it occurs to me that maybe, Mike, you would like to move a larger increase in the food budget, some percentage target, some percentage one time, to satisfy what you want to do. But making it all one time seems really a mistake to me.
I could amend my motion to that. You know, roughly one-third be target and two-thirds be one time. While we explore this, that'd be fine. So
other way around.
$5,000. No, if it's 9%, 3% being target is what would meet my general needs, and 6% in one time while we explore would be. So I'm glad to make that amendment if whoever seconded it is able to support it.
Would you consider another amendment if it doesn't get seconded?
I think the person who seconded it still considered it friendly, so we'll stick with that.
All right. So I'm sorry, that was one-third.
So 5,000 target and 10,183 one time is the motion.
All right. Okay, I have Martha next on my speaking list, and then again Jim, and then MKL. Mike.
I don't know about anybody else, but it feels like my groceries are 30% higher than, at least, or 50% higher than they've been, and we don't buy meat, and we don't buy anything fancy, and so this seems, I mean, I've been here 7 years. This is the first time the sheriff hasn't asked for any personnel. This is the smallest set of requests that he's ever asked for in a time when everything else has gone through the roof. So I feel like we should just stop talking and let him leave before you says, wait a minute, I meant to ask for more. So
I can do that. You know, while Frank was running the show, we bought a used helicopter. He'll be here next week.
Let me just say, I want to leave it the way it is. I just want to mention something that I heard at NYSAC last week, which was that the U.S. Congress passed and the President signed a change in the law for Medicaid, for Medicare and Medicare and Medicaid eligibility if you're in the jail but not yet convicted. That right now, or previously, we had to pay all medical expenses, whether somebody was convicted, sentenced, you know, or just pretrial, whatever. As soon as they walked in the jail, they lost Medicaid. My understanding is that that's changed now, so that they keep whatever eligibility they had before until they're convicted. And once they're convicted, then they lose those programs. Is that right?
I've heard there's legislation to that effect, but operating a jail, we haven't seen anything. I've seen nothing from the National or the State Sheriff's Association, and we get stuff, we get a barrage of stuff from them daily about bills and information and legislations out there. So we have heard talk that they may allow Medicare, Medicaid to pay for medical costs of some inmates in the jail, which would be great because that's another mandated cost that the county taxpayers have to deal with, and you know, depending on the severity of the issue, it can be very expensive.
And once they're convicted, then, or if there's a plea bargain, then, you know.
Keep in mind your medical bills are in what's called the 3151, and the old way of thinking that was a Class A mandate, and we don't get any rollover from it, and we just do the best to manage it, and it's just a cost of doing business. It's in the same areas where the board outs are, paying for the doctor and paying for other medical care when they go to a hospital or eye care, dental care, et cetera, right
okay,
now.
Okay, Jim. Just sounds like something to look forward to, maybe.
Yeah, hopefully.
Jim. Thank you, Nathan. Martha, it sounds like to me it's going to drive up the cost of ATI programs, but think about it. The whole idea of a food budget that is already overrun, I'm wondering where the savings is here. I think Public Safety Committee could certainly deal with the sheriff and see what these how these programs are working in other places. I'm really interested in hearing how Cortland County does in other places. And for us to say, oh, we'll save this amount of money, and in fact we're not saving any money, it's costing, the whole thing is already overrun. And the miracle in all this is that the county administrator and the sheriff agreed on this number, and I'm going to support it for that. Leave it alone, please.
Mike, looking at the rollover pages, the combination of the road patrol side and the jail side has been consistently over $150,000 in surplus if you combine the budget, which I know you can't always do, each year. And I know that Peter has great plans for those every year, and he comes to us and explains, and we very much allocate them. But in a budget this size, I think we're not decreasing the food budget. We're increasing it partly by target and partly by one time while we explore an option, is the motion.
Sheriff Maskell, would you like to speak to
that? Sure. We haven't had any rollover in a couple of years in the jail. And in 07, we're over budget. They are two distinct budget units. And if you recall, last year, when we did have a lot of rollover in the road, which was unusual compared to the last two or three years, we explained why, and I'd be happy to tell you again why, and that was why it was not a problem for me to place that 110 and change from that budget unit into zeroing out the jail deficit, because I thought it was an even break. The majority of our overages in the jail were from labor, and the majority of our savings in the road was from labor because of the transition from court to the road and from finding new deputies on a list. Currently in 08, I've got one deputy that's at war in Afghanistan, and another deputy's position that's just being filled right now. The gentleman starts next week, and so I'm sure there'll be some rollover in the payroll in 08 for the law enforcement side of the budget. But the jail budget, I'd like to tell you it'd be at zero, but after spending a lot of time, after hearing about this Friday afternoon, and spent a lot of time over the weekend and today looking through my budget, looking through expenses, looking through past expenses, I don't anticipate the jail budget being zero. I anticipate that the jail budget currently, again, will be in a deficit mode, and that's only going to exacerbate the problem in 09. So that's what I said. You know, to me, this resolution really kind of boils down to a management issue. Is the sheriff paying close enough attention to the vendors and the state contract prices? If you check with your purchasing personnel, they'll tell you, in fact, that we are, and we are continuing to look for new ideas and new things to either reduce costs or find different vendors to accomplish that. And that's what I spend a lot of time doing on a routine basis, not just with the jail, but with the law enforcement side as well. My hope is that this would simply be left the way it was presented and recommended by the county administrator. And, you know, gosh forbid, if we got savings and we got rollover, you can take it away from it, I guess. I don't think we're going to be so lucky as to have that in the jail, but perhaps we will, but I really doubt it.
Carol?
Yeah, I'll support this, again, because I trust the sheriff to have been watching over the budget and have come in with something that that doesn't significantly raise over last year. I would urge, however, both the Public Safety Committee and the sheriff, as you evaluate the food choices, to look not only at the immediate savings, but the impact of the quality of the food on behavior.
That's good. Look at me.
Need to prepare the food both from the staff point of view. Well, that sounds like that's a while. You know, it'll be the same amount of time from the cook's angle, but from the inmate angle. I mean, I think it's one of the few things that our inmates can aspire to is to get to work in the kitchen. So if they're going to have less to do and not be able to fill that role, it seems to me we might end up paying more to manage behavior problems. And then the second factor would be possible impact of under either of these choices of being able to supplement with local foods and support local vendors and the impact that might have. Other than that, I'll support it.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? All right, with that, the motion on the floor is $5,000 added to target and $10,183 one time. All right? So with that...
So again, if you don't want to change what's on the yellow pages, vote no.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right? Okay. All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right. One, two. All right, and opposed? Okay. All right. Do you have any more?
I had a question for Peter on the fuel usage. The this is more of an accounting question. When both the jail need for fuel and the roadside need for fuel are being accounted for, how do you keep track? On different sides of the budget for, you know, automotive fuel. In other words, are you running one budget down completely and then going to the other budget? Are you, every car keeps track of which cause they're driving for? How does that all work?
Well, here's the problem. In our division, corrections generally uses more cars than are allotted to corrections. Currently, we have one van and two cars that are set aside for corrections only. Once in a great while, the van gets used for law enforcement, but it's very rare. And typically what happens is we're using anywhere from one to three more patrol cars during the course of a day on and off. Not every single day, but an average of one to three per day, 5 days a week, to make a variety of transports. In fact, back I think in August, public safety meeting, I presented a transport summary showing a breakdown of costs as far as hours and time. We don't calculate mileage. It's about the only thing we don't do other than the mileage for the trips, but for the boarding out. But it gives you, that summary gives you a good sense of transports, the amount of transports, and where those transports are going and how much you're spending. So basically, what I've done in my request for the budget, and this is the same discussion the county administrator and I had back in August, is put together a fuel budget for this year. We removed the $3,500 that had been sitting in the civil side before and simply plugged in, if I remember right, it's 134 plus 20,000 over or something like that.
135 plus 20.
Plus 20 on the roadside and... on the 16. Other side, it was 16 more. So the total fuel budget for the sheriff's office, based on our best prediction and analysis, we estimate it being $205,000 in 2009. This year's budget, we think, is going to come in when we're all done expending fuel, somewhere is around 190. But keep in mind, this year's budget doesn't reflect the deputy that's in Afghanistan, the deputy that's just coming on right now, and the deputy that will be hired upon a new list or another transfer after the first of the year, whichever occurs first. And as a rule, two deputies equate to about 50,000 miles a year. So we figure we're going to have roughly 75,000 more miles. If you do the math on gasoline costs minus taxes, that 205 that we have budgeted total puts us right in line with what we believe it's going to be for next year, assuming there's not a large change in gasoline, either up or down. I'd be surprised if it went down a lot more based on what stock market and oil prices have been doing in the last week or two, but it could. But, you know, from things we've read, we don't suspect that's going to happen. And so we tried to make a conservative number for that 205. We could have done it in the non-conservative fashion, and it would have worked out to more like 2.25, but we decided to back away from that, knowing you had a tough budget year, and we didn't want to ask for more than what we needed. And actually, the fuel costs have been underfunded, as well as food, the last couple of years, and we've done without buying something else in order to pay for those fuel costs. And the other big thing within my budget is the increase in transports in general on the GL side, plus whatever board-out transports we do make. We weren't making those back in 2004. We just started that in the last couple of years once the variances to the jail were lost, once the decision was made and Commission of Corrections decided to be a little vindictive. So that's kind of where we stand. That's how we calculate it. That's how we figure it.
I'll take up my further questions with Peter privately. I have no motion.
All right. All right. Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on now to Probation Department. Mike, you have a motion for probation?
Yes. This is on page 63 of our OTR booklets. This is the system analyst position. It's OTR 48. It's being recommended at zero, although it was requested at target. So I'm moving 60,217 as one time. This gives the new director and staff time to look at the whole organization and possibly consider reconfigurations.
Okay. All right. Do I have a second? Kathy?
And a comment?
Oh, you have a comment?
I'll second and a comment for discussion. Is this, help me and tell me if I'm on the right one. It says here under cause, this position is offset by state aid. Am I on the right one? I'm on the wrong one again.
Page 63.
Yeah. Page 63.
Priority one.
048, after all the bullets under cause, there's a paragraph that says, this position is also recommended by Greg Potter, RTS director. Without this position, his department would be strained beyond limits, and since we can garner state aid on this position, it makes more sense for it to be in probation than ITS. This position is offset by state aid.
There is some state aid. When you read down those numbers, it looks like 8797 is the state aid portion, and then there's 2199. So part of it is offset, not a significant part.
So it's roughly 17%.
Okay.
All right. I have Martha and then Jim.
I'm pleased that, Mike, you're willing to put it in as as one time. But we've been down that road multiple years, and the department keeps coming back and saying this is the top priority. So I would like to move this as target. So in terms of strategy. Okay, all right. I'll move it as target.
All right. And I assume that's not friendly.
Not friendly, right. But it's an amendment. It's fine.
Okay, all right. Julie seconds.
Okay. So talk about it.
All right, so the motion now on the floor is to make this target. All right. Kathy?
No, just to be clear.
Oh, I'm sorry, I had Jim first.
Oh, go ahead. No.
I don't really want to comment on that part of it.
Okay.
Kathy,
and then Mike Singler.
Just to be clear, the county administrator didn't recommend this at all.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
So Mike's offer is actually a way of allowing 1 year to allow some transition here. And I think that that's a good compromise in a tough budget year.
And then I have Martha. I'm sorry, I lost my order here. Martha.
Sigler.
I'm sorry, Mike Sigler. Mike Sigler. Yes, I'm sorry. You and Martha look a lot alike. And yes. I'm just kidding.
He's smiling. She's frowning.
Quick now.
I realized that after I said it.
What is the job description on this? What would this person do?
Okay. This was formerly a microcomputer specialist. The job was reclassified in 2008 to systems analyst to more accurately reflect the position
that she
was doing.
I'm sorry, Ben, can you talk a little
louder? Yes, sorry about that. it's basically a position that is used within the department to as a support to staff and all the computer projects that we have going on. We're converting our database as mandated by DPCA, effective January 1. We're now going through a training. I've had my first taste of this new database. It's very robust. It's very overwhelming. It's going to be a huge learning curve for staff to switch over to this new database. So there's an incredible amount of training going on. She's also responsible for our technology restriction and monitoring program, which is currently being used with sex offender cases, fraud cases that are done on the internet, could be used for DV cases such as stalking cases. There's a whole wide range of cases that are internet-based that she would be monitoring through software. It is a forensics position in that sense, and so it does require specialized training. That's why I don't feel it belongs in ITS. It also requires, because of the conversion to our new database, it also requires an extensive knowledge of probation practice and what we're dealing with in terms of the probation technology. So that's another reason why I don't feel it belongs in ITS. We're also using her for updating our website. She's being used for data collection. I know that's something that the legislature has been asking for, so we are looking at our day reporting stats. So she's responsible for collecting that and analyzing and running numbers. She also works with our juvenile caseload in terms of helping staff get online and looking to see if kids are on chat rooms. It's complicated. It's complicated getting on the web and looking all this stuff up, and it takes a lot of training, and she has the expertise for this.
I have Jim, and then Martha, and then Kathy.
Thank you, Nathan. Noticing that it's been one-time funded, has obviously the job is changing in the sense that when you get involved in more things, and if you continue to one-time fund it, and I guess I'm arguing for Martha's target fund, but if you continue to one-time fund it, you know, is this the kind of job that you can reach a certain level and then it's going to go down?
No. No, I anticipate that this would be a position that would continue to advance because the technology is changing, the internet's changing, and we have to keep pace with that and hopefully maybe keep abreast of that. And I would see this position doing that.
Martha?
Question for Steve and for Pat. Take it in whichever order. Pat, we were told during the presentation sessions that the budget was presented to administration when before you knew you were going to be probation director. So I'd like you to talk about if you were doing this from scratch, would this still be your first priority?
Yes, it would be.
You didn't have to think about that.
No.
Okay. And then, Steve, would you explain it? Because you also mentioned in the previous session that, in a sense, it was just kind of like something or get off the pot this time. It's like...
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. No, it's time to make a decision. The department feels very strongly that they have proven the need for the position, and by us zero funding it rather than 1 or 2 year funding, what we're doing in administration is saying, make a decision. You need to move this forward one way or the other. So
you're not evaluating this and saying you think it's not worth
it. If anything, we support the
conclusion that the department has is that they have justified the position. The problem is that, you know, to meet the target, we couldn't meet that.
Yeah. Kathy, Frank, and then Jim.
Thank you. The reason I supported this motion is because it's not because I don't believe that it's needed or that you're correct in making it a first priority. What I see is that there's a learning curve, as has been expressed. Training of staff in the use of Caseload Explorer and updates are paramount. This position is needed. However, it's not clear to me that it's appropriate for us in a tough budget year and the devastating events of today and God knows what's going to happen in the future that we can actually make this a target with any kind of confidence. I know everybody's doing less with more, and it was just my hope that by making this a one-time this year, we could grant ourselves some flexibility.
Frank, and then Jim, and I have a comment.
How's it going, Pat?
Very well, thank
good.
You.
You surviving?
Yes.
Pat, how secure do you think the pittance that the state is giving you for this position is?
Well, I think we're going to be starting off 2009 in the hole a little bit because I think we budgeted 18% state aid, and it's actually 17.5%. So we're going to be starting off in the hole. You know, I have a director's symposium to go to in October. I think we'll probably get word there as to what we're looking at for 2009. But,
thanks. Yeah.
Great comment. I think we're all starting off in the hole if we're counting on the state budget. The question I have for you is it been the same person throughout 06, 07?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay, and I just want to point to people that if we do vote this as target, it will, the effect on the levy will be an increase to 2.9%.
All right.
All right. And that's all.
So what's the motion?
The motion right now is that we have an amendment to make this target funding, to make the total $6,217 target funding.
$60,000.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
2.9 includes this.
And then I have Carol and Martha.
Yeah, if you'd had the chance to look into the budget before, is there something else you would have taken out in order to keep this position?
Out of my target budget?
Yeah.
I don't see where. You know, all my OTRs are programming. Hardly any positions. This is the one position that has repeatedly come back for the fourth year. So to answer your question, no, I don't see anything else I would take out.
So, and let me make sure I understand. So if we put this into the target,
yes,
we're then increasing the target for all future years, right, for this, right, department.
That's right.
Yeah, I just think it's timing-wise, if we're trusting that we have it because we have a new person as director, that they're going to have a chance over the year to look at the budget and decide how to deal with it from their own perspective, that this is not a good year given our budget to build it into the target as opposed to do it as a one time and have the new director have a chance to come back next year with the recommendations on further reflection. So I would support this more as a one-time than as adding to the target.
Martha?
Yeah, I know I've had a lot to say already, but I think, I mean, Pat's been in this department how many years?
20.
I didn't need to put you on the spot, but
that's okay.
And that was why I asked her that question, and she didn't hesitate about agreeing that it should be, it was the top priority. It was always Pat, Kathy Lenthal's top priority. And I would say, I mean, we try not to make decisions based on sort of a single incumbency, an actual person, but if we've had the same person in this role for 3 years based on one-time funding, we've really been lucky, and it seems like this is the sort of position where there's a lot of knowledge invested in a person in a very particular niche, and you know, turnover would really be would waste a lot of important time. And I think this is really something that we're just always going to need. This is where law enforcement is, probation, supervision are, and in the future.
I have Mike Sigler, and then Dooley, and then Frank.
And I just kind of want to make it clear what we're kind of doing here, at least in my mind, and that's we're adding a position to the county. We're adding staff. We may say, well, we've always had this person, but we are now adding them on basically permanently. And I frankly just don't know if that this is the year to do that. But I have a real problem with adding staff on right now, considering, you know, we just had a discussion where we saw the growth of our staff levels increase, and we have no plan on how to mitigate that growth. So,
Julie?
I want to speak in more general terms about this process we have of voting on motions now. And as we approach the magic number of 3%, there is sometimes a strong tendency to not add anything else. At least don't add it without taking something out at the same time. And since we have so many meetings scheduled to vote and then to revisit, if we add things that seem important, and the tentative levy goes up way above 3%, we have every opportunity, with an even more full attendance, to cut things once everything that we think should be in there has been put in. And so I can understand Carol, for example, saying this year, one time. I can understand Mike saying this is not the year, but in fairness to all of the departments and all of the OTRs that we might want to talk about, please don't be afraid to add them if they seem important now, because I know we will come back and take some of them out. That's all.
Okay. All right, again, the motion on the floor is to make, it's $60,217, is that right? All right, and to make a target. All right. Carol.
I'm sorry, I have one more question.
Yes.
For somebody here. Would this process have allowed them to put this position in their base budget, their target budget, or because it had been formerly a one-time funded position, they were not allowed to bring it? Could they have built this in?
Easily could have.
Well, could have, but then something else has to come out. So when you look at the budget, it's just...
So when they made the decision to bring this yet again as an over-target request rather than a base request, the decision was made that of all the positions that existed now in that department, this was the one that was over target. They couldn't have switched that around.
All right, let's not get too into this, but Julie and Martha.
Is my understanding correct?
Well, yes, except if instead suddenly a department switches and puts another position out, that sends a really scary message to that employee. And so, psychologically, it's probably better to have the one that has been one time, several times, continue to be the OTR. In terms of morale, I guess, Carol.
Let me ask.
I'm not speaking for Pat. Okay. It's just a comment.
Then can I ask, are there any current vacancies in the department?
My position that I left, I have not filled yet because I'm waiting to see what happens. Obviously, the need is there to fill it, but I'm just waiting to see how the budget shakes out here. Thank you.
All right, Martha.
Well, I would just point out that Steve chose not to put it in the budget, even though he came in at 0.5% under our 3% target. So it could have easily been a decision the other way, and we would have still been under, Steve's tentative would have still been under the 3%. So that's one thing. The other is, as I noticed, I mean, when you think about this, this is the fourth year for the request. I think there's just been, let's remember, there's been, I think, a change in crime and supervision needed. There's been just an explosion of web-based stalking and you know, the danger to children and to all sorts of people because of new technology that is getting invented all the time. So this is not a traditional probation officer slot. this is a reaction to the real world, that the previous director, you know, said we should put money into this, and we've tried it for, we've sort of, if one-time money is sort of the trial, the way we try things out, we keep hearing from them, that, from this department, that it really is important to the department.
I'd just like to add that recently the mental health clinic has started using polygraph testing as part of its sex offender evaluation and treatment. And so now we have offenders who are submitting to the polygraph test, and they're failing. I mean, they are failing the test. And so what appears to be a very cooperative, you know, population, they report, they are doing things that they are not supposed to be doing, that without the polygraph. And so that just really underscores the fact that this is a very deceptive population, and that having a person in this position who can really monitor their behavior on the computer is very crucial. So I just wanted to say that.
Okay, ready to vote? All right, all those in favor of the motion, do I need to repeat it again?
Yes.
All right, the motion again is to add, to target $6,217 for the position of
$60,000.
What did I say? 6,000? I keep on doing that, don't I? $60,217 for the position of systems analyst. All right, all those in favor? This is the motion. I mean, this is the amendment, right?
Yes.
Now. Yeah, this is the amendment. This is the amendment to make a target. The original motion was a one-time. So this is, so we're voting on the amendment right now. I'm sorry. All right, so all those in favor? Four, yep. All right, and an opposed? Okay, and now we're back to the original motion, which was to make it one time. I have Frank and then Martha.
No, I was just going to move the one time.
Oh, okay.
Unless Michael is...
It's already on the floor.
Thank you.
Yeah, Martha?
I'd like to amend it to make it two-year funding so that at least this person has a little bit of confidence.
Okay. All right, do I have a second on the two-year funding?
Second.
Will seconds. All right, now that is the current amendment on the floor. Any discussion about that? Okay, all those in favor of that amendment, raise your hands, please. Six. And opposed? Okay, so that fails, and we are back to the original motion on the floor for one-time funding for this position. Do we have any discussion? Mike?
Well, it just seems to me, if what we're saying here is that crime is changing and going to more computer-based crime, I mean, I just saw a journal report out, 2 weeks ago that said crime, at least in this area, has dropped, other types of crime. So... is this more of a shift of resources, or is it an explosion of a new type of crime, I guess would be my question.
I see it more as a new way to supervise, a new tool for supervising people. And without it, I just, you know, this is in terms of the technology restriction and monitoring part of the position. That's not her total position, because she does do a lot of ITS data collection, running creating new databases. I mean, it's more to it than just that piece. But it's a new tool in supervising, and we have to be able to stay ahead.
I'm sorry. I had Mike after you. Who else did I have? I have Steve, and then I have Kathy, Frank, and then Mike Quinkelaire, and then Carol. Okay. All right, Steve, go ahead.
Okay. Well, we had the same discussion with Pat when we were reviewing the budget, and what came out of that was that you couldn't really shift the resources because there was an increased length of time for probation sentences. So that was what prevented us from saying, well, just why don't you not fill your position and, you know, fill this position instead. The numbers that probation is looking at are very high at this point, and these periods are much longer than they have been in the past, and especially when they come to the sex-related crimes.
Kathy?
I just want to say that the proposal to do it one time, even though the county administrator recommended not to do it at all, is a response to all the things that have been said. And the position was increased to pay grade in 2008. I think at the end of this next time period, if we can pass this as a one time, we'll have a pretty good indication of where we need to go with it. Just we're trying to do the best we can in a tough situation.
Frank?
Thanks, Nathan. Pat, I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
That's
but
okay.
But you've been on the spot all afternoon. I heard you say, and I heard Steve just allude to it, that your position has yet to be filled.
Yes.
The position you vacated.
Yes.
Without revealing anything that's confidential, can you give us some idea of what the how much that represents dollar-wise, approximately?
Probably 70,000 plus fringes.
So if this position is not funded, do you think that some of those dollars could go towards fulfilling this position?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say that I'm not going to take a look at that. I'm going to have to make up the money somehow in order to keep this position, because I feel very strongly that this position be part of the target funding. But it's not a good situation all the way around to not have an appropriate ratio of supervisors to probation officers. You know, there is a certain amount of workload that needs to be reviewed. It puts a lot of stress on the supervisors. They're already digging in and having to do more. I'm supervising programs as well as doing the director job. I don't know how much longer that's going to be able to go on. I mean, this was just a decision that I made in the interim to see how this budget shook out. I mean, I didn't want to be running into something and then get my, you know, getting over my head. But it's important that there be a good, like I said, a good ratio so that supervisors have, or probation officers have the availability of their supervisors, and that the quality of work that we do continues to be high.
Yeah, follow up.
Frank.
Yeah, Pat, also, how closely will this position work with Greg Potter? I noticed that it's mentioned in the write-up. But can you say something about that?
It's pretty independent of ITS. I mean, I think that they meet periodically to kind of review her position and what she's doing to make sure that there's collaboration between the two. But it's fairly independent. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. I have Mike Finkelair, and then Carol, and then Martha.
I see this as slightly analogous to the discussion we had regarding county administration needing some resources in time of transition. It did not succeed as target, but I do strongly support it as one time to allow the entire department to analyze the needs, other possible ways of meeting this need, and make the case next year if it really is no other way to fund it. So I have four children, three of whom are daughters, and many of these offenses that could be predators to my children would be very well served by this kind of intervention, and I still cannot yet go to a target, but I certainly want to advocate for one time.
All right, Carol and then Martha.
Yeah, this is an issue I really do hear from a lot of constituents on, and one which there was a lot of discussion before I became a legislator. I mean, this is the one topic that goes up and down our set of blocks. Is there a sex offender in our neighborhood, and are our kids safe online? It's not that I don't support this position. I would, and I'll support it as a one-time, but I really do, I think we have the need for this, but not necessarily the need to expand. And so I would urge you to build it into your base budget next year.
All right, Martha, and let's try to keep it brief.
This is a really basic public safety issue. I would love to ask you, I'd like to ask you to come back to us with caseload history. I asked Kathy a couple years ago, and she was able to produce for me sort of history of your how many officers you have and what the caseload numbers are. So that'd be really helpful if you could do a few years in a row.
You want to know for the entire probation department?
Yeah.
For the probation
officers? Carol's talking about, everybody's talking about trying to fit this within your base budget. We're not without knowing what the service levels are, that doesn't help. I mean, if you have, you know, if you've had an explosion in the overall number of people you're supervising, we should know that in relation to what your staffing levels have been.
Well, I can give you that probably right now. I mean, the department is 40 and a half people. Their half position is the capping employment specialist position. Of that, there are probably 25 to 30 probation officers. They're divided into the family court unit and the criminal court unit. The criminal court units are carrying right now high 50s, 60 cases apiece, plus they're doing an average of 4 to 5 investigations for the courts at any one time, which involves writing reports and making recommendations to the courts for sentencing. The family court, well, do you want to know the family court numbers? I mean,
you just said that in the criminal side?
Yes.
50 to 60.
Yes. The specialized caseloads carry a reduced number. ISP is more, by law, they are only to carry maximum of 25. That's because they're seen more intensively. They have to be seen twice a week, plus the home visit contact is increased on a monthly basis. So in order to provide more intensive supervision, you have to have a smaller caseload, otherwise it's totally overwhelming. So does that help you?
That's great. It's terrific you have that on top of your head. But, you know, I guess I'm looking for, if this fails, or maybe even to try to come back to get longer funding for it, it'd be really interesting to know what the trend has been in the last, say, 4 years. That's possible.
Okay. All right. Okay, it looks like we're ready to vote. All right. Again, the motion right now is to add $60,217 to as one-time spending for the position of systems analyst. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And oppose? All right, and that's 11 ayes, 1 no. All right. And just to let people know, if we still remain under 3%, I may bring this back as target in a separate motion in future meetings.
Okay.
All right. Next, Mike, we have SPCA, and you have a motion regarding SPCA.
Yeah. Before I make this motion, let me just clarify. Although I brought forward many of these motions, first of all, I want to make sure that people understand the balance of my motions, both adding and taking away, we're still a net decrease. So it just the way today worked out is many of them are added, but they do balance out over time.
Okay.
And anyone else is perfectly encouraged to make motions, even though I was the first one in the gate and they seem to be popping up in the first 2 days with my name attached to them. Everyone else has free right to make motions ad infinitum. I will move on page 23 of our OTR booklets. Item 18, page 23 of our OTR booklets, OTR 18, this is regarding SPCA, and this is a bald-faced understanding that to do this motion will decrease services. I will reduce the target that is being recommended at $20,000 increase from an increase of 20 to only an increase of 10, reducing it by 10. So move.
All right, do we have a second? All right, Pam seconds. Okay, and discussion. I'm starting off with Frank. Jim?
I guess, Mike, the most blatant question I can ask you is, how did you come up with 10?
I was reading the description, and there was some phrases in the description that led me to believe I can live without that service, or I can live with a decreased service. There still will be an increase of 10. I see the need for it in the description, but not a full increase of 20. So I just cut it in half based on what I personally think I could live with: more feral cats, more stray cats, more whatever that service that we were contracting for, we will live with, you know, being overrun. I'm sure the caricature will be dramatic.
Frank, you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I just want to, I'm passing around a write-up that Abigail Smith provided us with earlier this month when she made the presentation. Norma, can I pass him to that side? Thank you. You've read this all before, but it's good to remind ourselves that one of the items that we're required to do by the state is to provide rabies vaccinations, whether the cats are feral or brought in or what have you. And it's my understanding, if you take a few minutes and just eyeball this, the spay, neuter, and vaccination is about $50 a pop. And I know that the numbers seem dramatic, but I just want to remind the committee that earlier this year we had a couple of incidents at the health through the health department. Remember the bat case? And the just recently there were a couple of other cat cases too. I checked with Alice just to get current numbers. It costs us about $2,100 in order to provide the rabies shot series to anyone that it cost the county $2,100 to inoculate the gentleman that was bitten by the bat, for instance. And we've had two rabid cat cases recently as well. While the first $1,500 is hopefully reimbursed by the individual's insurance, that's the ER cost. The county is responsible for a series of four shots at $150 a piece. The point that I'm trying to make is that this is a service that I know that it's hard to believe that there are approximately 1,000 unowned cats that go through the SPCA every year. I mean, you can see the numbers here. I think that we're just ignoring a potential health problem here, and we're going to have to pay for this one way or the other. And the sad part of it is that we don't really, I mean, we have an option, we don't have to pay for it. But it could come back to haunt us because of the mandated Ag and Markets article that requires that we do provide for rabies vaccinations and the spay-neuter is part of the package. But I thought you'd appreciate these numbers. I probably have studied this more than any other board member in the last 15 months because it's been made very apparent to me. And I know that a lot of you have sat in on a number of meetings regarding this as well. And I thought I saw Abigail slip in the back if there's a question that she's certainly better prepared to answer than I am. But I don't think that this is one that we can easily pass on. Thank you.
We have Jim and then Kathy and then Pam. Do you have your hand up?
Yeah. Yes, I guess. I just had a question from what Frank just said.
Oh, okay, yeah. Why don't you ask your question?
Can I just ask?
Yeah, go
ahead.
Sure.
I mean, it seems from the sheet that, in fact, we are under no legal obligation to have this program at all. I mean, we do not. They say that all cats shall be vaccinated against the spread of rabies, but it does not say who is responsible for doing this. So, I mean, my understanding is that I think we should do this to the best of our ability, but from everything that I have, my understanding has been is that we are under no legal obligation to do this.
This is, I would class this as a cost avoidance and health issue. If we don't do something, the cat population seems to increase every year.
Right.
And part of it is due to people who take on these pets and then abandon them.
Right. Well, I think that there's an obligation. I mean, I think that I would like to, and I do support this. I just don't support the level of increase. I just want to make it clear, though, is that this is not a legal obligation that we have to do this. This is more of a social community obligation to do something, and I support it. I just don't support it to the full extent that's being asked.
All right. I have Jim, and I'm sure Jim's going to tell the story of how exponentially cats
No, I'm not going to do that. Someone already told it here. It's kind of the cat in the middle of the room question. If you pick up a cat, and this really has to do with the operation, if you pick up a cat and it's a so-called feral cat, how long do you keep? Do we not kill them?
That's
at
correct.
Some point? We never do that.
They do not, that's why
it's a no-kill post.
They're not. This is a no-kill shelter.
So no, they do kill. They do euthanize some cats.
I thought that was only for dogs.
No.
Okay.
All right. Abigail, do you want to maybe help clarify the situation here?
These cats get put back after they've been neutered.
They put back out and let go.
To live out their natural lives.
All right. Jim, again, the question was...
Well, I got an answer.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, I have Kathy then, and Carol.
Thank you. Well, this is timely because this is actually where I am with... The problem is the definition of a feral cat isn't clear to me. I don't think it's clear to the community. And as many times as I've asked it, maybe I'm thick, but I haven't quite got it. And I'll use as an example, here in the explanation... It says, and the bolded part is under the question, what exactly will the county's money support? It's at the end of the last sentence. Our request for support from the county is for the spay, neuter, and rabies vaccination parts of the cat control program only. And yet, in the over-target request under cause, actually under effect, it talks about, if support from the county is withdrawn or significantly reduced, the SPCA will need to reduce service levels. A reduction in cat control services would likely include restrictions on the number of stray cats that can be sheltered at the facility, including the acceptance of feral cats and the elimination of emergency response to sick and injured cats. What's not answered and what keeps buzzing around in my head is, if you got a feral cat, and this is, as you all know, complaints that I've gotten from my constituents and other people in the county, you got to catch that cat and bring it in. And even then, it's going to be released back, guess where, to the community where it was picked up from. This, to me, is counterintuitive, and it also doesn't seem to me to be consistent, and I hope I'm wrong here, with the money, the county's money support just being restricted to spay, neuter, and rabies vaccination. That's not what the effect says. So once again, I'm confused about what our money is going for, and it's not also clear to me that, as Pam pointed out really clearly, we're not actually required to do this, and what we're required to do isn't necessarily clearly being defined or done. So help me.
All right. Abigail.
Okay, I will try to help you. Yes, the original request that we made to the county outlines for the board all the things that the SPCA tries to do for the community's cats that apparently are owned by no one. What I tried to clarify in the memo and in my presentation last time I was here on September 10th was that things need to change going forward. This that I'm asking for the county to partner with the SPCA on is a prevention initiative. There are other things that can be done with feral or free-roaming cats. I can tell you that most of the cats running around the city of Ithaca aren't genuinely feral. They're free-roaming. They came from someone's unneutered or spayed cat that had kittens under somebody's porch that now wander around, and they're semi-social. And you know, there are things that the SPCA can do to relocate those cats. For the majority of the rest of the county, you've got cats running all over the place that are continuing to breed, and with the potential, because they're not vaccinated, of spreading rabies. What we'd like to do is address that issue. What I also need to communicate is that the shelter cannot be full of 500 unadoptable cats. We can't do it. We won't do it. It's not fair. It's not humane. It goes against what the SPCA does. So what we're looking for is a solution from the endless stream of cats that have no known owner. And to end that growing number coming in, we need to stop the breeding out in the field. That's what we're proposing to do. In addition, every time you spay, neuter a cat, you can vaccinate it, which is turning out to be a pretty critical thing. So
that helps a little bit, but I still don't understand, because even if we spayed and neutered every cat in the county, there's going to be other cats that could come in, and there's more that could be born. Let me just go to what's up for me. If, let's say that this proposal happened, what would be affected? If 10,000 of it was made target rather than 20,000, what would the effect be?
You would spay or neuter and vaccinate 200 fewer cats.
So there's not really an educational component to this. It's just a matter of sheer choosing to vaccinate the cats or not. I'm just trying to figure it out, because I still don't understand. Feral cats aren't free-roaming cats, but the distinction seems to be whether they're in the city or not.
No.
No.
talk about education.
Education.
Okay, too many questions, sorry.
Yeah, no, and I've sent, specifically I've sent you lots of material, but it is not a straightforward issue necessarily. You are correct in saying that if you gather up all the cats and take them away and kill them, there's a bunch more cats are going to move in there and continue to breed and continue the cycle. I wrote
Actually,
that in the memo.
I didn't suggest killing them.
No, but I'm saying that's the old way of solving the problem. What the feral cat advocates, now I know we're throwing around free roaming, stray, and feral. Free roaming is a term used for cats that are wandering around that basically have no home. They can be wild, which is feral, or they can be semi-feral, which is they probably came from somewhere but they're abandoned or whatever. In any case, they're homeless cats. No one's taking responsibility for them. So what feral cat or free roaming cat advocates across the country are finding is that communities need to find a healthy, safe population balance. You keep taking them out, they keep moving in, it keeps growing and growing and growing. So what we're trying to do is stabilize the population. There are programs in place that can be, if community members want to work with an organization like the SPCA, there are deterrents. If you live in the city and you don't want a free roaming cat, there are things we can do to help you with that. Yes, we TNR it and we vaccinate it, but then trap, neuter, and return.
Thank you.
Sure. Then we can help you keep that cat out of your yard, for example. What we cannot do is take those cats and put them in the shelter.
And just for clarification, I want to say I've been to the SPCA probably 6 times in the last 3 months. I've almost taken a few cats home. I love the facility, and I know it's a problem that we need to address. Just for me, in the budget, I'm trying to figure out some alternatives. That's all.
Yeah.
Okay, I have Carol, then Martha, then Mike Sigler, then...
Vote.
Right.
Vote.
Okay, and we'll vote.
Someone need to vote around here.
Responding to Frank's question about what the numbers are based on, I just want to point out that a 3% increase over last year's modified budget would bring us to $33,000 total, which would be a $6,000 increase. So if we're looking to stay at the same percentage increase as we are for all the other departments and agencies, that adding a $6,000 over target would keep us at that level. In terms of the policy, we're a policy-making body, and sometimes we want to have policies that we can't afford to have. And I guess I distinguish between what I see as a public need to reduce the population of cats that would serve the public interest, and how we get there right now, given our budget constraints right now. So the notion of paying once to collect the cats, paying clinicians to neuter them, and then vaccinating them, which is sort of more than we do for our homeless people in many cases, and then paying again to put them back on the street. I also am a cat lover, and have cats, including one that I lost this year that I had gotten from the SPCA, which was a kitten with the mother, a week old, but and raised, and it was a traumatic. But I just don't know that a three-stage process is something that we can support right now when it would be I don't know what percent increase over last year's budget. So, I can certainly support Mike's motion, and I could even lower it to a $6,000 over target request so that we would be in line with what we're doing for our other programs.
All right. I have Martha, then Mike Sigler, then Frank Burrow.
There's a lot of spending that we do where you can't measure the outcome. It seems to me you can measure, you guys can count the cats that you've been doing, treating this way. Now, I think I've heard, I've seen this request for 7 years, and it seems it's always the same kind of thing. Can you come back to us with another trend? I mean, like, if we keep spending money to trap, neuter, and release animals, and the numbers don't go down, what are we doing? It just seems like, I'd like to know that. And I think what Carol was getting close to saying was, and I think this relates to the dog contract. I've, you know, been in on the Council of Governments discussions about the municipalities that have a dog contract, and they have a mandate on dog control. I think there is a reluctance of government to accept a policy created by, and accept the consequences of a policy created by a nonprofit board. Nathan Winograd, your predecessor by a few people, led your organization to create the no-kill policy, and then he quickly left town and wrote a book about it. And you guys have the cats and the dogs, so it's not hard to see that this is, when you have that policy, there's a long-term consequence. County and town governments didn't ever buy into the policy, and we have this nervousness about, is that what we're really supporting? And so that's the reluctance here. And I, you know, for me, I'd like to know, you know, are we getting anywhere with this?
Okay, I think your first question was, is it measurable? I think there's two things to look at there. One, yes, because every time you spay or neuter a cat, you can count how many unwanted kittens you're preventing. That is absolutely measurable, and we can also measure the number fewer unowned, unwanted kittens coming, being surrounded.
Much simpler than that. I just want to have you come back to us, because whatever we vote on tonight, we can undo it or redo it. Or, you know, we have other meetings. I'm interested in your developing numbers, a table that just says, in 2001 we TNR'd this many cats, and 2002 was this.
Sure, actually that's been provided before. I'm happy to send it again. Absolutely. But the other piece of this is that rabies vaccination piece. I don't want us to lose sight of how critical that is. And it's not my responsibility to run around vaccinating cats, and perhaps it's not yours. My point in the memo on September 10th was, I'm suggesting we collectively do something about it. And, you know, small little story. Animal control gets a phone call. It's 7 o'clock in the evening. Someone at an apartment complex in Ithaca says, there's a cat acting crazy underneath the vehicle out in the parking lot. I think it's injured. Well, okay, we help injured cats. We go out there. We show up. The cat is literally chewing on the tire of this vehicle. That's not normal. So we catch the cat, and, you know, it's doing cartwheels across the parking lot. Very easily, where children live in this apartment building, some kid comes out, reaches, oh, here, kitty. That cat got tested for rabies and came back positive. That was 10 days ago. So it is more than overpopulation, which is why, together, we can make a difference on both fronts. I can't run around trapping cats and giving rabies vaccinations, but if we can do both together, that, for me, has an impact that's worthwhile. The second point that you raised was about no-kill. Very, very clearly, the no-kill philosophy has absolutely nothing to do with the cost of providing dog control. And it's not in those contracts, it's not in that budget, and nor does it have anything to do with the TNR situation, with the exception of the SPCA and its current policy cannot and will not act as cat control, gather up the cats, and euthanize them. We're just not going to do it. So a good solution to that is for us to work together and try to prevent the population and also vaccinate them at the same time. That's what my proposal is.
That's clear.
Thank you.
All right, Mike Sigler, and then Frank Proto, and then Carol again. She has another story about kittens.
My question is a question.
Yeah, there's the other cat doing backflips over in there.
All right, Mike Sigler.
Cornell's been working on a way, I think they have a way, of sterilizing deer so that they can control the deer population.
Yeah, that didn't work.
Didn't work?
No.
I was just wondering if there was another way to sterilize.
They are working on that, and it's an oral sterilization method. Good Lord, they're working on it. Okay. Nationally, when that happens, we'll be able to, you know, really do something, but it's not available yet. The deer thing failed miserably.
Frank Proto.
Yeah, I got to endorse that. When the rabid raccoon population started to move north from down south maybe 8 or 9, 10 years ago, we could watch it come up from the south. We worked with Cornell and the DEC about sterilizing, dropping packets from planes. There were all kinds of things that we tried with raccoons, and the university did try it with deer. The only way you're going to eradicate deer in Cougar Heights, like it or not, is to shoot them. And that is not acceptable to some people. But anyway.
or you can hit them with my car.
Or you can hit them with a car, right? All I wanted to do is just read you out of the Board of Health report from last month, which we received earlier this month. Since this is as of the end of July. These are the numbers that we got at the Board of Health. There were 19 cats impounded as compared to 45 last year. 19 were held for 10 days, and then they were tested. There were a number of dogs in the same vein. This is the key one. For the month, 39 people. Remember the numbers I gave you before about $2,000 a pop to get the rabies series? Mm-hmm. 39 people began post-exposure treatment. Just multiply it. These are the numbers we get every month at the Board of Health, and that's only for 1 month. So it's a pretty serious concern. That's why I'm trying to relate this to a health-related issue. I understand what Martha and others have said, but we can't ignore it. And if the population can get stabilized, and it's been an uphill battle. I mean, there's no two ways about it. The concern is that you can't walk away from it. Has there been any positive movement? Sure there has. But we're not going to catch up all in 1 year or even two.
I'd like to add some trivia to that, which is that rabies is the most like fatal disease on earth. It has once you have neurological symptoms,
terrible.
You're guaranteed basically.
And we haven't talked about dog. We haven't talked about dog control.
Thank goodness.
That's coming. Well, no, I'm not relating to the contract that the Council of Governments, as I understand it, Abigail, that's still under negotiation,
right.
So we're not getting into that at all.
Correct.
But at some point, I'm bringing back a request on the cruelty, which we haven't even talked about, the Article 26 piece. You're in for a treat on that one, too.
Okay, so thank you. And, I'm sorry, we still have a few more people. I thought we were almost done. Carol and then Martha, we're 15 minutes over on this discussion, so we should wrap it up. All right. Remember what we're talking about, $10,000 adding to target instead of 20. That was the main issue? Yes.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
But I am going to raise something that's sort of a longer-term idea and ask if you have any experience or know of other areas that have successfully instituted cat licensing. I believe that this county has talked about, or municipalities here have talked about cat licensing in the past, and it was determined at the time it wasn't feasible because most cats, like my cats, wouldn't keep the collars on, but now there's new capabilities of putting chips under the skin, and you know, is that something we could explore for the future, or that you could be helping us explore for the future, should we?
Certainly, I could help explore that, and yes, every cat that leaves the SPCA has a microchip in it. It's definitely the way of the future, and it's a good thing to do. The problem with licensing cats, the pro, obviously, is that you can make sure, like with dogs' licenses, you can make sure that they have the rabies vaccination. You can't license your dog without a rabies vaccination. Same, you know, that would work for owned cats. The problem is, in what we're addressing here, are all the cats that apparently have no owner.
No, I understand.
So, but as far as that's a whole separate issue, there's pros and cons for sure. It has worked in some communities. It's absolutely blown up backwards in others. I think it probably is something that's worth looking into.
Yeah, I was
for rabies alone.
Yeah, again, I'm suggesting looking at ways to separate the sort of the public responsibility and the private responsibility here.
Absolutely.
Okay, last question, Martha.
I'm not insensitive to the rabies issue, but I'm just not sure we're getting anywhere on this. It almost makes me feel like we should have a capital project and go kind of round them all up at once, you know, and get a posse or something, but never mind. So I'm frustrated with this.
So you're endorsing a police state with cats?
Yes.
Well, I didn't see that coming.
Anyone that's having trouble with deer in Cougar Heights, Martha will lead the posse.
All right, obviously this discussion is ready to be wrapped up. So the motion on the floor is to reduce the administrator's recommendation of $20,000 added to target to $10,000. All those in favor, raise your hands, please. All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right. And those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. So that passes 8-4. All right. Okay. Mike, that concludes your motions, right?
For today.
Yes, for today. All right. And Mike, you have a motion now regarding assigned counsel?
Yeah, I'll wait till Norman gets this up here. It's not in your book. It's a new OTR, number 91.
Is there also information in the fiscal target section of the book?
Do we have it already?
Yes. So in the fiscal target section, it's page 55 and 56.
Okay.
My motion here is to move the $25,000 from multi-year program expense in assigned counsel to target.
All right, do I have a second?
In a second, I'll discuss it.
All right. Martha?
Second.
Martha seconds. Mike?
Good efforts to put the administration's good efforts to put together a budget. One of the proposals they put together was to convert some of this normal existing target money in assigned counsel to multi-year, and as a part of a package. This is one piece of three items in the budget, as I understand it. To do a study at another reassessment of how we go about doing the work that assigned counsel does, and looking at public defender option as one option. So I'm not going to talk about the full proposal. I think we have public safety was given a 7-page memo on this. I came away from that discussion saying that I wasn't convinced that we needed to do such a study. It could be done in the future, and that I wanted to restore this target funding and basically to leave a program in place that works. And if we need to change it in the future, if we want to study it, we can, but not to do the proposal that administration had suggested.
So the request is to restore the 25?
Restore the 25. Yes. It's currently multi-year.
Where is it? Where are we looking? I mean,
if you look in the pages that have they're the fiscal.
Yes.
Do you remember? Excuse me for interrupting. Do you remember the Frank Proto request of September 8th that had the 7 or 8 different items on it that Norma produced? It's on that list.
It's also evident on page 277 under Big Books in their detailed expense lines. You can see how 2008 modified is 990, and it goes down to, it's in there somewhere.
I would have noted it.
It's multi-year funding, so it wouldn't show up as a negative reduction at
okay.
all.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the best page to look here is just looking at 55.
The bar graphs. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's an explanation there. Unspecified target reduction, $25,000 replaced with multi-year funding.
Okay.
All right. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's. Everybody that wants to speak, please raise your hand. I have Martha. Or more, weren't there? All right.
Yeah, I'll speak.
Okay. Oh, and Mike.
Ask him for more time.
All right. Martha, go ahead.
Early on in our presentation meetings, I had asked that we get a one-page statement of the several places that the proposal that came to public safety was operationalized in the budget. And if I've gotten that, I haven't seen it.
I asked Norma about that, and it is just this one piece. There are others that are associated with it, and you'll get there. But
and I what?
You will get there when you have other topics that are going to bring out the other associated. You had a question about what was going on.
Okay, but it's also true that if we're adding target money here, it'd be good to know where else we might be able to cut money. So I'm sorry that we don't have that sheet, but in any case,
there isn't any associated target money
with this request.
All right, let me finish what I was going to say. I asked for a page that said, here are the places where it shows up. I haven't gotten that. I want to know, would this action completely put assigned counsel, make them whole, back to where maintenance of effort, in other words?
Yes.
Okay.
Mike, did you have a direct response to that?
I just had what I think is a clarification, and that is that it agrees with what Steve is saying. That another change is that is related to this, but as Steve said, does not affect target funding, is to add one-time money for a paralegal aide in the Human Rights Commission, and that was to be funded out of rollover, not target. So, but the purpose of that was to do such a study, add time to that paralegal aid, and it says planning of the transition phase from merging government departments in an effort to provide effective and timely legal services, blah, blah, blah. But it does not affect target.
Okay. Do you have a point of clarification?
Follow-up. So the effect of reinstating the $25,000 to assigned counsel, your intent is to then zero out the human rights piece?
I wanted to do this tonight. This was originally scheduled for tomorrow, but I made an error in my own personal scheduling, and I can't be here tomorrow. And Julia as well couldn't be here to comment on it. So I asked that it be put on the docket tonight. I just wanted to make this one change. There's nothing else that will reduce target in this set of changes. Like I said, the one other budgetary impact is the use of rollover in human rights. That will not affect target.
Okay. Mike Pinkler.
I just want to point out that this action, in a strange way, is moot. We pay what we pay. It's a mandated program. If we have $600,000 in attorney fees, we pay that. If we have $1,600,000 in attorney fees, we pay that. It's a guesstimate. That's the end of my sentence. We're going to pay the bill.
I have Martha and then Mike.
That's true of the next page, page 56, which shows the actual dollars out the door for the attorneys. This page talks about the staff that supervises and manages the attorneys, assigns people, etc. So that is not true. This page is not a mandate in the same sense that page 56 is.
Okay. Mike Hattery?
Not in response to Mike, but you're right. To some degree, it's moot, but it isn't moot in that it's talking, budgets are planning. What we're talking about here is where we're headed with something. And I preface my comments by saying while I appreciate the work and the initiative, I think these are the kinds of things we need to be looking at. I did not agree with the proposal to look at consolidating assigned counsel with the Human Rights Commission. And so I'm asking to undo that budgetarily because it talks about plans and intentions. It has very little budgetary impact.
Will?
Mike, in that you do not like the combination, and I'm not sure I do either, I'm curious as to why you would want to task the Human Rights Commission with the job of looking at indigent. I'm sorry, maybe this ever.
I didn't. That's one of the things I didn't like.
Okay.
You know, if you have two separate agencies, I think you'd want to have somebody independent looking at it if you wanted to look at it.
I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about a half-time para at Human Rights.
That's right.
Right, that was part of the package. And I'm just saying it doesn't affect Target. It's a use of rollover for that position. And I'm not in favor of it, but I didn't. That's a separate issue.
Separate, okay.
Issue
not part of the motion.
Got it.
All right, Martha.
I think we looked at the Design Council program a couple of years ago, and Nancy Schuler actually wrote me and said, "Tom Todd looked at this, chaired some committee, looked at it even longer ago. Kathy's digging that up for me." I think it's a perfectly good idea to look at Assigned Council again. I think the last time we looked at it was before the fees were increased. So I think it's a good idea to look at it. I talked to some people at NYSAC about it. But I think the thing to do is first do no damage, and I'd really like to leave this program where it is. The Public Safety Committee, what's ABI? Advisory Board on Indigent
Representatives.
Thank you, Representative Will, which now has two representatives, liaisons. From here is going to look at it. I'm sure Joe Mariani will have some ideas about how to look at it. I would like to just go back to the status quo. Why we look at it?
That's what this does.
Yes.
I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Kathy?
Would somebody clarify for me what the motion is?
Yes.
I apologize. I need to move my car.
Sure. Yeah. The motion is to take the unspecified target reduction of 25. Right now, there was a target. $25,000 of target was removed and moved to multi-year. Right. What this does
for whom?
For assigned council. And this and Mike Hattery's motion that was seconded by Martha. We'll take it back from multi-year and put it back into the target. And so it's basically undoing what the administrator had recommended.
Can I just ask another question?
Sure.
I saw on some committee agenda that this was something that was going to be looked at by some committee. Has it gone to that committee or through it yet?
I was commenting based on being a member of public safety, and it has come to committee.
Did it go through committee? What was the result?
This did not.
Okay.
I can answer Kathy's question. There's also an effort to look at it from the Advisory Board of Indigent Representation. They have set up a working committee to look at it. Clearly, I think they have pretty strong feelings on the matter going in, but and we may want to have some other group look at it.
Okay. I have Mike, and then,
my understanding is that Public Safety will, in their October meeting, design a task force to look at the issue. 2 years, which is multi-year funding, does not at all diminish the program while it's being explored. We've done that several other times this evening. While you're exploring something, you consider one time waiting more information.
All right. Mike Hattery?
Was anybody else before me?
I'm Nathan. And unless someone can correct me, but I believe the ABIR board is in the county charter, and they're the organization that literally is the advisory group to this assigned council. And I think what Greg was looking for in the Public Safety Committee was the use of that group plus two legislators who recently got appointed to take a look at the issue that about assigned council that came out of administration and the way they were going to structure it, or made a suggestion to structure it. And I think Mike's resolution kind of takes it back to ground zero, and then we can do the study.
All right. I'm sorry, I lost track here. Mike, you had?
I'll pass.
Okay, and then Martha?
Yeah, in public safety, we talked about it in August. I wasn't there. We talked about it in August.
How did you know?
I read the minutes.
Just curious.
They were great minutes. I can't remember whether we talked about it in September, but...
Yes.
Okay, and but there's been no vote, there's been no approval of the administrator's proposal. In fact, the sense of the committee was that we shouldn't go through with the proposal as expressed in the budget, but rather keep the status quo and pursue a couple of avenues of looking at the topic.
Jim, and then
short comment, Nathan. Yeah. Thank you. Let me just say, to the administration's credit, they were doing something that they had been instructed to do by the legislature. Look for ways to save money. Look for ways to combine programs, and they were responding to that along with other things to us.
Kathy?
Thank you. I appreciate the recap. I've been grappling with this a little bit because, on the one hand, I think it's really important that we figure out ways to be flexible and to respond to the changing situation. We've heard earlier about the way that crime is changing, increased internet predators, and possibility for stalking and domestic violence. There are other ways that crime is changing. What I'm not sure about and what I'm trying to get at is the administrator's proposal, it seemed to me, was a little more hands-off than what's being proposed by the ABIR and the public safety. What I was hoping for, and I'm not sure if this is getting to that, was something of a little bit more independent review, because after all, that's the only way we're going to get an answer that is truly unbiased and will help us, you know, lower our costs and increase our effectiveness, which those are the two balancing points that we've got to always choose between, the greatest balance for the taxpayer. So what is this $25,000 supposed to do, and is the proposal that Mike is proposing going to do that? Is that the same as the county administrator's suggested action?
Let me see if I can clear it up. Okay. There are a few issues going on. One, I want to thank Jim Dennis for the comment about doing what we were assigned to do. That's exactly what I thought we were doing. There are separate issues. Okay. I was suggesting that you look at the assigned counsel program. I said that this should be done by a different body than just the ABIR, because in my mind, the majority of the people on ABIR have a conflict. If you're receiving money from the program, I mean, that most of us would recuse ourselves from being participating on that. Now, you know, that, and one thing I have noticed in this organization is a conflict of interest is a statement of fact, not a statement of guilt or an accusation. It's just, you have a conflict. It's not good or bad, all right? So, yeah, Frank does it all the time. Okay, so then there was the part of the proposal of moving the supervising attorney to the human rights. That seems to be what has caused most of the reaction. And so what the legislature is doing at this point with this motion is just saying, we don't like that idea. We want to take it out of the budget. We appreciate the fact that you really pointed it out to us, because, as you can see, it's really hard to see in the budget. That's why we wrote you a memo, to make sure you didn't miss it. And the overall reaction is, nah, we don't think that's a good idea for lots of different reasons. That's fine. That's great. So Mike's proposal takes care of this and moves it back so that the supervising attorney is independent, not under any other department. Okay?
I appreciate that so much.
Okay. With that, are we ready to vote?
Yes.
All right. The motion on the table is to restore $25,000 of target funding, which is currently multi-year funding in the administrator's recommended budget. Is that right? Okay. All those in favor, raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All right. And oppose? All right. Actually, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's 10. It's 10. And then oppose? 2. So that's... All right. And with that, I think we are done for tonight.
What's the tax levy?
Oh, and so I'm sorry. The effect on the tax levy now is that it's 2.78%. It's at 2.78%. That includes the action that we just took. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow.
What's tomorrow?
Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be here on time.